Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. The Savage Nation. Little Stan Getz to get you warmed up. You know, I was going to talk about Obama's communistic fascist appointment to the Supreme Court, Kagan, who you think is a wonderful, nice gal. But do you know that she wrote a speech calling for the redistribution of speech? Did you know that? In a 1996 article, she wrote that the redistribution of speech is not an illegitimate end for government. Now, I've told you about liberal fascism from the beginning. Someone stole my title and made it into a book. It went nowhere because I didn't write it. But I'm not going to talk about Obama putting up a woman as fascistic as her to the Supreme Court. Others are doing it, and they're doing a darn good job. Instead, I'm going to talk about Playboy magazine because today, the interview appeared. I got it on the internet. It was sent to me by the company to my producer. And I started to read it. Some of it's good. Some of it's unfair. You know, what did I expect? Playboy interviewing Michael Savage? Did you expect them to make me look good? They tried their best to make me look bad. But I'm going to ask you who looks worse, me or the editor, David Hochman. I want to quote the beginning of the article, Michael Savage Playboy interview. I'm going to read from it today. And I want to ask you something. Listen to what the editor of this article writes at the bottom of his introduction. Contributing editor David Hochman spent more than 16 hours interviewing Savage, says Hochman, quote, I can't remember a more difficult interview. Savage was a fine host, but his opinions are extreme to the point of being poison. Much of the time I hated him. He's maddeningly bullheaded and closed-minded, but he was just as leery of me. Even when we were laughing, I knew he was thinking liberal vermin media. I got to tell you, I didn't once think liberal vermin media, David. In fact, I'm so naive, I thought that I liked you and I thought you liked me. What you have here is a classic portrait of a paranoid, deceptive, backstabbing liberal who pretended he was a nice guy. Never once did he seem disagreeable to me. I didn't think that we agreed politically, but I didn't think he'd go out of his way to try and stick a knife in me. I mean, he only stuck it in himself. He says, even when we were laughing, I knew he was thinking liberal vermin media. I didn't think it once. Now I do. Now I do. Now I'm even doubly sure that everyone in the liberal vermin media is a liberal and a vermin. I didn't think it once. So let's begin at the beginning. Michael Savage, Playboy interview. And he writes this. Shall I begin from the beginning? Two kinds of people listen to talk radio in 2010. Those who think Michael Savage is a nut job and those who think he's right. The Savage Nation has daily his daily broadcast reaches an estimated 8 million to 10 million listeners a week, and even his haters admit the show is like radio crack and wildly unpredictable. One minute Savage is railing against illegal immigration or advocating work camps for the homeless. The next he's getting misty over a Walt Whitman couplet or cuddling his poodle Teddy. Savage abhors whiny liberalism and the Prius elite even as he plays up his lefty credentials. A PhD from Berkeley, years of association with tree huggers, gays, and beatniks, and a home base in, the San Francisco Bay Area. But he's just as hard on conservatives. Ask him, if you dare, about Dubya or Glenn Beck. Savage likes to call himself an independent-minded individualist. First of all, that whole paragraph makes no sense. You're telling me that a PhD from Berkeley makes me into a liberal? You mean nobody who has achieved a PhD from Berkeley could be possibly be a conservative? Don't you see the bias in the minds of these people? Then he says, and guess where he lives? The San Francisco Bay Area. You think I'm the only person in the San Francisco Bay Area who thinks this way? What world do these people live in? So then he talks about me, and he talks about my family, even though I specified in the beginning, do not bring my family into it, and he agreed to it. But, you know, it's like the scorpion and the frog. He was the scorpion, I was the frog. What did I expect? The problem here for him is that he tried to sting me, and he got stung by his own poison. So let's begin at the beginning. Playboy, why are you so angry, Michael Savage? Savage, do I look angry? Playboy says, a little. You definitely sound angry. Savage, well, I get worked up. First of all, I get angry because I can't believe I live in a country that's so effing stupid it lets every group in the world come here. Please let us in because our country is an asshole. Fine. Let us come in on asylum because our country will kill us. No problem. Then the minute they get here, they turn around and sue the effing country, make demands on the country, won't learn the language, won't salute the flag, and all they do is disparage the country. Playboy, you've neatly boiled it down to a problem of borders, language, and culture, correct? Savage, it's my definition of how our nation is defined and why it's unraveling. It's also a framework. Here are our borders. Here is our language. Here is our culture. If you want to live in America, wonderful, but become one of us. If you want to practice your home language, do it at home or in your own community. Playboy, that sort of rabid nationalism can quickly lead to xenophobia, which in turn can... Well, remember what happened in the 1930s in Germany? Savage, bull crap. That's typical left-wing horse crap. I don't even understand what they're talking about. What, I'm Hitler because I'm against illegal immigration? It makes me a racist? I would say the racists are the people who come into a country that isn't theirs and take it over and tell me I should speak their language. You go to a sporting event and they're waving the Mexican flag, not an American flag? What if my grandfather had waved the Russian flag? They would have killed him. Playboy, you wouldn't be here speaking freely on the radio every day if it weren't for your immigrant grandparents and so many millions more. Savage. Not all waves of immigration are the same. Not all immigrants are the same. Not all nations of origin are the same. The times are different. My grandparents wanted to become American. Maybe they spoke their home language at home, but when they went outside, they wanted to be Americans. So I don't know what that has to do with race. I think it has to do with attitude. And by the way, I'm not talking about all immigrants, not even all the illegal immigrants. I'm talking about 30%. I've seen data that one-third of all prisoners in America happen to be illegal aliens, most of them from Mexico. We can't survive as a nation if we keep letting this large swath of people come across the border. There are countries that put up barriers that say you can come into the country if you have a profession we need or if you have a certain amount of money to start a business. But, and I'm continuing now with the great Playboy interview, huh? But we can't afford to support you. We can't do that here. We say, come on in. Now, how in the world can we take in an unlimited number of people? Who's going to pay for their health care? Who's going to pay for their jail care? Who's going to pay for their legal care? Who's going to pay for their housing? The answer is the rest of us are, and that's why we're going broke. You want to help? So I go, okay, two things. Let's take California. Put a highway patrol officer in every hospital. And I'm sorry, no ticky, no washy. You're not a citizen. You can't get care. Of course, if it's catastrophic, such as an auto accident, you give them what they need. But you can't get care if you're not a citizen. I'm sorry, we can't do it anymore. On a macro scale, you can see where a society is the same as a household. And if politicians started to listen to the people who are screaming and saying, treat the nation like a household, not like a piggy bank, you can keep hitting. We'd all be better off. We can't keep raiding the piggy bank because all these outsiders want something from us. I'm just using logic. I'll continue with Michael Savage's 8,000-word interview in Playboy, which is on the Internet right now, not yet at the newsstands. But I want to go back to one thing I said at the beginning, and you can be free to call at any time with any comments you may have or to do with this topic, by stating again that at the outset of the interview, the interviewer writes this, quote, Hockman spent more than 16 hours interviewing Savage, says Hockman, quote, I can't remember a more difficult interview. Savage was a fine host, but his opinions are extreme to the point of being poison. Much of the time I hated him. He's maddeningly bullheaded and close-minded, but he was just as leery of me, he writes. Even when we were laughing, I knew he was stinking liberal vermin media. It's news to me. When we were laughing, I thought that I liked him. And you see, I'm actually a decent person. He's not. Liberals like him are the reason we have trouble in America. They lie to everybody. They lie to themselves. He actually thinks he's open-minded. He's not bullheaded when he went in with a bias like this. Let me tell you something. As a person trained at a master's degree level in anthropology, the first thing you learn before you go out and you do field work is don't inject yourself into the interview. The minute you start interviewing yourself and making yourself part of the interview, as he did, you've poisoned the interview with your own biases. I rest my case. I'll be right back.
Tall and thin and young and lovely, the girl from Ipanema goes walking, and when she passes, each one she passes goes.
It is the Savage Nation. Now, I'm going to talk about the Playboy interview, which came out today on the internet. It'll be in the newsstands Friday. Again, I got to say, I was shocked to see that this guy was sitting there with such hatred towards me, because he didn't tell me that. I mean, it'd be one thing if he came and said to me, you know, I really hate your politics, or I hate you, and, you know, this is going to be an antagonistic interview, and let's go for it. So you get into a wrestling match. But the man pretended he was a nice guy and liked me. Then he goes and writes this crap saying he hated me the whole time. And then he says, even when we were laughing, I knew he was thinking liberal vermin media. I didn't think it once. I felt as though I had contacted an old friend. I felt very good about the interview. It just shows you how naive I really am. Frankly, I think it says an awful lot about him. And the paranoia and the backstabbing nature of this man is amazing to me. And he says my opinions are poison. So my opinions about stopping illegal immigration are poison, even though my opinions represent that of 70, 75% of the American people. Let me ask you something. Whose opinions are really poison? Men like him, who want the illegals to run all over us and bankrupt us even further? But look, I don't want to editorialize on the editorializing. What I want to do is read more from the article. And I want to take your calls at 1-800-449-8255. Let's take the first call thus far. Marilyn, Nick, you're on the Savage Nation. What do you think so far?
I think he's intimidated, Mike. You've got what I call the Savage Trinity. You're outspoken, independent, and intelligent. Most things that most men in the media these days are none of. And you would think that Hawkman, of all people, being surrounded by beautiful women there at Playboy, would be intimidated by the women. But instead, he's intimidated by...
Well, look, the reason I agreed to the interview is he had previously interviewed George Carlin, who used a lot of four-letter words, Donald Trump, who certainly was a very controlled interview, and then another actor, I don't remember. He did a fairly good job, so I figured, look, if he's assuring me that they're going to be my words, how bad could it be? But look, what did he leave out is the issue. It's like everything else. What did he ask me that he didn't print that makes me look too good?
Yeah.
But now that I read what he said, that he hated me, I mean, he was sitting there in fear of me? What, is he crazy?
Did he say that, or were his words at the beginning of the article or at the bottom?
No, right at the beginning of the article. Listen to this. Michael Savage Playboy interview. So before he writes about the interview, there's a whole page about the article and about me. And then Hockman says these nasty things. He says, most of the time I hated him. Now, what kind of reporter writes that about a subject?
Right. Well, even if he writes that, why not leave that till the end? Why would you want to set the tone out front? I mean, right there.
Well, I'll tell you what I think is going on here. I'll tell you something that I figured out. He writes for Playboy. We know Playboy is a far-left-oriented magazine, and it's about sex. Okay. He knows that in order for him to continue to get work in Los Angeles or in the world that he lives in, he has to say he hates me. So he was afraid that the interview would make me look too good, because I am too good. I'm certainly too good for men like him. And so he figured if he says up front that he really hated me, they won't think too badly of him for not having skewered me. I think that's what he was doing here, protecting himself.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, I've never...
You know what? I feel bad for the guy. I pity him. I'm at a certain point in my life where I can only pity people like him, that they're that desperate they'd have to say a thing like that. Thanks for the call. Paul in Oregon, Michael, you're next up. Go ahead, please. Your opinion counts. What's on your mind?
Hey, Dr. Savage. I love your show. And the problem is that people are intimidated by intelligence, just like your previous caller talked about. Now, you also think that this guy, unfortunately, has to hide, like, the majority of the people in the Liberty, or in the media, excuse me. And I'm glad that you have a strong voice out there, and I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you for the call. Let me go on with the interview. Time is short. So then we go past the immigration thing, and Playboy says, is it logical to call for an outright ban on Muslim immigration as you've done? Savage, I'm very worried about the number of mosques being built, where they're being built, why they have to be so dominant. I'm also worried about what type of Islam is being promulgated in America today. I've talked about the Wahhabi sect of Islam, which is very violent, very aggressive, and very unaccepting of any other religion. We should consider what's being taught in any house of worship. I don't know of a church or synagogue in America that teaches people to go out and kill anybody or to go back to the homeland and learn how to strap a bomb on their back and blow it up on an airplane. There may be some fringe churches, I don't know, but quite a few mosques are doing it. Just ask the FBI. Look at the Somali community of Wahhabis in Minneapolis. Why are so many young men going back to Somalia and becoming radicalized? Why are so many Pakistani men going back to Pakistan and being radicalized? Well, let's look at the imams and what they're teaching these kids. But I don't know. It's not my job to solve these problems. It's the FBI's job. I'm supposed to be protected from this. Now, tell me what is wrong in anything I just said. Is there anything I said that anybody could disagree with? Well, let's go on to the next one. Playboy, but what is your responsibility? How responsible was it to say we should kill 100 million Muslims, as you did in 06? Savage, oh, come on. That was in the context of a whole longer conversation. But again, that's the sort of BS question I would expect from liberal vermin media. I don't know anybody who would actually say go ahead and randomly start killing people. That comment came right after a bunch of Islamofascists blew up the subways in Spain, which was followed soon thereafter by the London bombing. There was talk of them getting control of a nuclear weapon. What if they take over Pakistan with nukes? And then what? We are going to face this Hobson's choice. People kept saying the extremists represent only 10% of 900 million Muslims. That's when I asked, would you rather see 100 million of us fried or 100 million of them fried? Nobody says this stuff, so I say it. I'm screaming out from the wilderness. Again, this is the kind of lies that liberals specialize in. Something that we have not seen since the Soviet Union era, when they take somebody's statements and take them out of context and try to destroy them. But I'm setting the record straight here on the Savage Nation with my own audience. I don't need some flack writer from Los Angeles who was not man enough to say to me what he said to me behind my back. I'm going to say to you what I say straight up to you, and you can comment any which way to Sunday. This is the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com. More to come when I return right here on the Savage Nation. I am reading from the 8,000-word Playboy interview with yours truly, Michael Savage, not out yet.
Savage.
All right, welcome back to the Savage Playboy interview. I'm thinking about something. Is this Topsy Part 2 by Cozy Cole? I'm thinking about something. I've read an awful lot in my life, and I've read a lot of interviews. I actually never read of an interviewer saying most of the time I hated him. Now, it would be one thing for this guy to have said most of the time I hated his opinions, but he actually said he hated me. How much did he get to know of me that he could say he hated me? And then he says I'm bullheaded and closed-minded when he judged me and hated me without knowing me? I don't think that this writer, whatever his name is, David Hochman, will ever live down what he said in this article. I believe that this man is going to regret that he ever said that he hated me for the rest of his life. I believe that his own mother would find that offensive, frankly. And I don't know of... I've never read, by the way, an interview in my entire life of anyone where the interviewer said most of the time I hated him. I've seen interviews from some about mass murderers. I've seen Dan Rather's interview with Saddam Hussein, a noted mass murderer. Did Dan Rather say I hated Saddam Hussein once? I've seen interviews with Ahmadinejad, the Hitler of our time, the man who kills homosexuals, a man who kills women, a man who kills political dissidents. Has anyone ever said I hated him? No, the liberals seem to love him, and yet they hated me. Now, what does that tell you about them? What does that tell you about liberals in the media? So you could say, well, look, you got what you deserved. You knew he was a liberal. Why'd you do it? I'll tell you why I did it. I'll give you two answers. One, because I was treated, I think, roundly and fairly by a real writer who was really more like a poet than a journalist in The New Yorker. I mean, you know, the man who wrote that interview with me last year in The New Yorker was a real writer. And he didn't come into it with a political bias, so far as I know. I'm sure he's a liberal. He was a music critic for the New York Times. But the man understood art, and he understood the difference between mere rhetoric and real art. And that's why he wanted to interview me. He knew I was an artist. This guy doesn't know the difference between an artist, a polemicist, a poet, a pauper, and a shrimp. Moreover, he doesn't understand what he just did by saying most of the time I hated him. He hated me? He didn't know me. He sat with me for 3 hours and he hated me? How could he hate me? What did I do to make him hate me? He hated my ideas, but he didn't know the difference between a man and his ideas? And this just shows you the trouble we are in America. Do you understand this? The second reason I did the interview is because I thought I could reach an entirely new audience, which I'm going to do, because it's a 3D issue of women with, fake boobs, and you've got a lot of people who are going to buy it just to, ooh, look at the boobs, big deal. There's not enough boobs in the world. That's all you need is now plastic boobs and in paper and in a pair of glasses on your head to just show you. But anyway, so it's going to reach a lot of people. They may find out that a lot of people agree with me on illegal immigration. So, I'll go on with the interview in a minute on the Savage Nation. I wanted to read that. So let's go on to some other. So then Playboy says, so you're doing it to be provocative? Savage, if I were not a controversial figure, you wouldn't be here. My job is to make people listen. I'll do it any way I have to. What did he say? Damn, that's outrageous. Well, yeah, but listen to what I'm saying. See it in the bigger picture. Of course people love to twist what I say, take it out of context, make me a monster. Then he goes on to big gay questions, on and on about gay, and I won't even read them because it's boring. And I've made it very clear I'm a sexual libertarian. I'm not going to explain myself again. So we'll go on to something more important. Let's see. Not that interesting. Not that interesting. Here it is. Playboy, the first half of your career, globe-trotting ethnobotanist and author, was devoted to advocating vitamins and healthy living. You were a regular tree hugger. What changed? Savage, I still like trees. In fact, that's what gets me so much about these so-called environmentalists. They drive their Priuses and whine about light bulbs, but do they actually do anything? No. These Obama eco-warriors up here have turned beautiful Marin County into industrial England with all the smoke from their fireplaces at night. But how many of them have been out there and saved a tree or a forest? I spent years documenting the indigenous plants of various island nations and how they're used in medicine. But I call myself a conservationist rather than an environmentalist because the word environmentalist is too loaded. Who wants to pollute the land? Who wants to pollute the water? Conservatives are more environmental than liberals in the sense that who is it that goes hunting? Who is it that goes fishing? Who goes boating? A large group of them are conservative politically. Do you think they want to poison the earth and the water and the fowl? I don't think so. The conservatives are the natural Teddy Roosevelt conservation types. Now, here it comes. This you're going to just love. Playboy. Many conservatives also say global warming is a lie. Savage. Let's talk about global warming. Did you hear about the computer files leaked out of the University of East Anglia that revealed how so-called climate scientists were cooking the data on climate change? Have you heard about Glaciergate? The chief proponent of the climate scam, Phil Jones, admitted this past February that the climate data are bogus. Editor's note, Jones never said his data were bogus, but he did confess to sloppy record-keeping. The British government exonerated him in April, saying his research did not contradict scientific studies that show global warming is real. Hey, get real, David. The British government is about as reliable as the man who was just thrown out in his dirty keister. He also admitted that there hadn't been any statistically significant global warming for 15 years. The head of the UN Committee on Glaciers has said glaciers would be gone by the year 2035, even though he admitted he knew the data were inconclusive when he was told about it 2 years ago. This is one of the greatest scientific frauds of our time. Let's put common sense out there, Playboy. So you're saying nearly 50 major scientific societies, including every National Academy of Science on Earth, are making this stuff up? Why would they? Savage. Control. Money. You know how many billions of dollars are invested now in green technology? And you know how many hundreds of millions were given to these scientists to prove this crap? And if anyone didn't go along with it, they were cast out of the whole scientific establishment. They were the heretics. No funding, no research, you're fired. Listen to his answer to this. You're not going to believe it. Playboy. You must be a joy to sit with at dinner parties. See, notice he didn't respond to what I said. He now switches it to, you must be a joy to sit with a dinner party. Savage laughs. I don't go to them. Or if I do, I'm miserable. When I was in Florida recently, a conservative woman we know invited us to Trump's Mar-a-Lago club. The food was good. The people were nice. But when Donald Trump was introduced to us, he was cold to me. I suppose he'd heard I'd mentioned something once about his hair, which I thought was fake. And I still don't know what it is. But no, mostly at social gatherings, I'm morose. I sometimes crave people, but then I get there and it's chaotic and unfocused and I want to leave. I get rattled around people, I'll be frank with you. Playboy, do you have any friends? Savage. Friends? What is that? What does it mean? We all end up alone. Playboy, do you have any neighbors you could borrow butter from? Savage, it would be nice to have friends on the block, but that's not the case. I'm basically a communal person in my heart, so it's an interesting question. I was a kid who had hundreds of friends. I was like the neighborhood mascot, the shortstop. Everyone loved me. I never thought I'd wind up isolated and alone in a house on the hill in Marin County. I was joking about it on the radio yesterday. I said I always thought I'd end up owning an inn in New England. You know, where the fat guy owns the inn. Henry Miller wrote it best, I think, in Black Spring. Every morning I awake to 1,000 paths to take. Right? It's life. What are you going to do? You go down a road and you live with it. And you got to thank God for what you have. Because compared with what our ancestors had, I don't care who the American is, you don't have to go back too many generations to realize we're all living on Easy Street. As poor as we may be, as complicated as things are in America right now, the poorest man is living on Easy Street compared with what went on two or three generations ago in Europe. So I don't complain. Playboy, what made you leave America to go to Fiji as a young man in 1969? I'll continue with my reading from the new Playboy interview. It's 8,000 words. It's going to be circulated widely. Already Newsweek picked it up in a blog. Their headline is, Savage Does Playboy. I am a sexual libertarian, says Newsweek. Conservative commentator Michael Savage has a penchant for being racy and provocative, and even we were surprised to see a sit-down he did in this month's Playboy. And, of course, blah, blah, blah. So let's take the callers. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Any women out there want to comment? I'd like to hear some women, by the way. Chicago, Mike, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I'd like to know why you're not calling this guy a coward. That these guys really deserve that adjective.
Well, why would the guy say that he hated me when he wouldn't say it to my face?
Because he's a coward.
Well, I think it's a sad commentary on a man who pretends to be a journalist, who has to cover his liberal credentials by saying he hated me, when he really meant he hated my opinions. In other words, how did he get to know me? He knew me in the interview? He suddenly knew me? I can guarantee you if he was given an interview with Ahmadinejad, a mass murderer, he would never say I hated him. I can guarantee you. I can guarantee it.
I would think so.
Now, what does it say about liberals who never say I hate Ahmadinejad, or I hated Saddam Hussein, or I hate Hugo Chavez, but they'll say they hate a conservative? What does that tell you about them?
I would just like to hear you add that one descriptive term to these progressives, that here's a man who you granted an interview to under false pretenses, in my opinion.
Well, it is false pretenses because I said to him in the beginning for a few weeks, I don't trust you. And he said, well, it's 8,000 words. We don't edit what you say. How, you know, what can we do? And I said, all right, you know, let's take a shot at it because it's pretty much a quoted thing. Little did I realize that they would editorialize in the beginning and try to turn me into what I'm not. But, Mike, in listening to any of my comments, have you found anything I have said inconsistent with how I am on the radio?
Not once.
Not once.
Not once.
You know, I'll tell you something about me, Michael Savage. I am what you hear. You ask anybody who knows me. I'm not different off air. Everybody asks me when they get to know me. Who asked me this yesterday? I don't even know where I was yesterday. I can't remember yesterday, let alone where I am. I know where I am right now on the radio, but who asked me this? I think yesterday someone said to me, how much of what you say on the radio do you really believe? I look at them like they're crazy. What do they think? I make this up for fun? I said, what you're hearing is the tip of the iceberg of what I really believe and what I really think needs to be done. Does that answer your question? And the people get shocked. They think I invent this stuff? I got another guest coming for them. If they ever understood the seething anger in this country toward what they have done to Lady Liberty, how they have raped her and urinated on her, they'd come to understand what's coming in this country. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So here I be. So if I were a sports car, what would I be? Let's see. They like to drive it, but they hate the car? What car? What car would that be? A car that the exhaust burns your feet when you get out of the door? Something with a downpipe outside the door and you burn your foot on it? Something that's got six forward speeds and you need a really powerful left foot to clutch the car? Something that's, you've got to double clutch every gear? I mean, I'm that kind of sports car, but it does 0 to 60 in 3 seconds. So that's what it is. So he wants a smooth jazz conservative, a smooth jazz controversial figure. They don't exist. Unless it's Saddam Hussein before he was executed, or Ahmadinejad. I'm sure he'd love Ahmadinejad. I'm sure if Playboy could sit down with him, he would just, you know, kiss the man's hands. It's unreal. So you want me to continue or not? Raise your hands. I'll read another piece, then take your calls. I am reading from the 8,000-word interview with Michael Savage in Playboy, which is not yet on the stands. I don't know if you want to buy it when you read this. Playboy, what made you leave America to go to Fiji as a young man in 1969? Savage. It made no rational sense at all, but I've looked back and self-analyzed it. Part of it was trying to find cures for my brother, who was born brain damaged. When I was a kid, my mother cried over and over again to me about Jerome, and I'd say, Ma, if God could come down, I'd say this to her when I was a little boy. What would you ask God to do? She would say, I'd ask him to fix your brother, make him better. Now, what does a little boy want to do more than please his mother? I'm going to give Mommy what she wants. There's no God in the room, so I'll help her. I'll fix my brother. So I looked for all these cures in the oddest places because I knew traditional medicine didn't have answers. That's what led me outside the normal medical school thing and on a long journey to Fiji. But what the heck did I know? I'm living there on these godforsaken islands, working with folk healers. I've left a young wife and children behind. I spent most of my money because nobody would fund it. What the heck was I trying to prove? That I'm Schweitzer? That I'm a wild man? I wouldn't do it again today. Playboy, again, instead of responding to that, he goes on to Allen Ginsberg. Do you regret inviting Allen Ginsberg, the famous beat poet, to visit you there after you and he exchanged a series of letters? And I give him the answer. It's very boring, frankly. And he brings up the naked picture. I may as well answer it again. What remains is a photograph of you swimming naked with Ginsberg, who was sort of the poster child for gay America at the time. Laughs. Savage, have you seen the picture? Playboy, no. Can you show it to us? Savage, I don't have it, but I know the picture. There's me, ethnobotanist, jumping in a cold river. There's Allen Ginsberg. There's another poet. And now open the frame, and there's about 20 other people with us, all naked. But that's how people went swimming in the South Pacific at that time. See, they don't talk about that. Instead, they take the snapshot, cut out the other people and make it look like I was swimming with that filth. But listen to this, Playboy. But given your stance on gay politics, do you understand why that photograph would be confusing now? Savage, angrily. What does it mean? You hang around with a gay man, you're gay? I mean, what are they, nuts? Don't you see the hate that comes out of people when they try to pervert this? Who the heck would sleep with Ginsberg even if they were gay? He was a horrendous man, horrible. And over a lot of reasons to not like the man, he wasn't my friend. Now, here's the best part of it. This is really great. Playboy, were you ever confused about your sexuality? No. Hello? What is this? I mean, I can't understand this. Playboy, well, your vitriol towards them makes us think of something a teacher once said. Quote, well, we hate others. It's because we recognize something of ourselves in them. Savage. So in other words, I want to be a radical Muslim who blows up people in a schoolyard? Do you understand the answer I gave him, how brilliant it is, and how illogical this guy is? Do you understand what I just did here? Savage. I go on and I say, I hate radical Islam because I hate radical Islam, not because I want to put a bomb in a schoolyard. That's the logic of what you just said. And again, you're assuming I hate gays. I don't hate gays. I've said 100 times I'm a sexual libertarian. It goes back to the same lie. You're coming at it from the wrong perspective. I've said it. I'll say it again. I hope the interview is about more than this. I really do. This obsession I don't understand. You're a sex magazine? Okay. So you want to know about sex. As I said before, I'm a sexual libertarian. Playboy. When did you lose your virginity? Savage. Oh, God, how old was I? 19, 18? I don't remember. But I did date a Playboy bunny when I was 17 or 18. Playboy, you did? Savage, yes. I was in college, and I'll continue about that little story in a minute here, maybe in the next hour, because I know that you're going to want to hear about it. Play a little Desafinado, because that was the music that was playing when this occurred. Stan Getz music I'll never forget as long as I live, because that was the music that played. Well, it was no big deal. And by today's standards, it's a big deal. Like a waitress in IHOP with a bunny tail. I mean, that's about it. I'm nothing against waitresses or IHOP, you know what I'm saying? But everybody, how could that woman be better than any woman you've ever seen on the planet? Why, because she had a fake bunny tail on? She was suddenly the greatest woman on earth? All right, sir. That's not in the interview. That's on the radio. I'm taking a breather. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I'm surprised. I still don't hate the guy. I'm surprised he would write a thing that he hated me because it makes him look bad. You know, and I'm going to confide in you something funny. He wants to get it on the straight up of the MS. At the end, he wanted to take a cell phone picture of me on my boat. I said, why do you want to do that? He said, my mother's a big fan. I said, oh, God. I can tell you right now, if his mother's a big fan and she hears what he said about me, she's not going to be a happy camper the next time she sees little Davy boy. I think mommy's going to give it to him pretty good. And if Mama Hockman, if you're listening to this show somewhere in America, and you want to apologize for the boy you raised for being such a lout and a coward, you can call 1-800-449-8255. You can get even with your son, honey. All right, we'll be back for more of the famous Playboy interview with me, Michael Savage, on the redistribution of reality right here on the Savage Nation.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Talking about the redistribution of reality on the Savage Nation, trying to make me into something I am not. And no matter how they try, they can't succeed, can they? Welcome to the program. In the last hour, I was reading from an article just off the presses, so to speak, if they still come off presses. I don't really know anymore. The June issue of Playboy, the 3D issue, has an 8,000-word interview with yours truly. So we got it by email, and I was commenting on some. I was reading from it, of course. And what shocked me about the article was how it began. I'm going to read this to you again. He writes a long thing about a savage, blah, blah, blah. And then he says by saying, contributing editor David Hockman spent more than 16 hours interviewing Savage, says Hockman. I can't remember a more difficult interview. Savage was a fine host, but his opinions are extreme to the point of being poison. Much of the time, I hated him. He's maddeningly bullheaded and close-minded, but he was just as leery of me. Even when we were laughing, I knew he was thinking, liberal vermin media, close quote. I'm actually surprised by that on two accounts. One, I didn't once think liberal vermin media, although I do now. And number two, I had no idea he hated me because I thought that I liked him, and I thought he had kind of liked me. But it just shows you, liberalism is not only a mental disorder filled with paranoids who project their own hatred onto others, but they're never straight up with who they are. And to prove my point, right now on the Savage Nation, I'm going to prove to you what I actually thought of this man, and it was not poisonous and it was not hateful, even though he says that I called him names, which I didn't in my own head. How would he know what I thought? It shows you how paranoid these libs are. So this show, this piece I'm about to play for you, was from when, guys? February, right after the interview? February 1st, 2010, Michael Savage went on the air, and here's what I said. Here it goes. Replay it. So I get a major magazine about a month ago. I agree to interview him. The guy comes out. I have him over to my house right after the show, 7 o'clock at night. Yes, in my house, not a restaurant, because I can't take background noise. You can't do an interview. Now, this is an 8,000-word long-form interview. He asks questions, I answer. So it's not that much of a setup possibility. It can be the way questions are formed and what the questions are, and I'm aware of that. And I don't know what it's going to be yet. I may wind up hating it. Nevertheless, okay. I figured the reporter's married and he has a child. That's like for a guy in the media from a left-wing publication, that's already 95% of the battle. So I have him to my house. I order sushi in, had sushi delivered, and we sit and talk. 7 o'clock it starts. Now, it's 10 o'clock at night. We hadn't stopped talking once. And I hear my clock ticking behind me. I have a lot of clocks in the house. I love pendulum clocks because I grew up in my father's antique store, so I buy a lot of antique pendulum clocks. You ever sit quietly in the house and listen to a clock ticking? I do, and it's beautiful. It's not like watching paint dry. It's one of the most simple meditations there is, and there are. So any above it, at around 10:15, I hear the clock ticking, and I feel something change in me. And what changed in me was the following. I said to him, I'll make his name Richard. I said, Richard, I don't know you, and I don't know what you're going to write, but I got to tell you something. First of all, he said, are you tired? I said, no. I said, I'm from New York, and I could talk all night. It wouldn't bother me after talking all day. As long as I'm speaking with someone who's intelligent and we have important things to talk about, there's no end to how much I have to say or want to say. So he said to me this, and I said to him that. And I said, you know what you feel like to me? You feel like somebody I knew when I was an undergraduate in college where I'd stay up till all night talking about politics or philosophy or science or whatever it was. We'd spend the whole night. I hadn't done this in 30 years. Now, the point of this conversation with you, my audience, is the following. We live in a world where none of us really get into a conversation at length with anybody. Think in your own life. How long has it been since you actually sat down and had a conversation? Meaning, someone says something, you answer. Someone asks something, you ask something. Remember right. What the word conversation means, with verse, back and forth. And something I learned a long time ago is this. The object of conversation is to keep it going. The object of conversation is not to beat the other guy. The object of conversation is not to stop the other man from talking. The object of conversation is to select your answers and your words to keep the conversation going. That's why I'm so good at talk radio, because I keep the conversation going. You get it? So you see, not once did I say anything negative about the guy because I had nothing but positive feelings. Little did I know he hated me the whole time. Again, I want to reiterate what I want to say. He didn't know me. He certainly didn't get to know me in 3 hours of sitting in my kitchen. What was the act that I performed that would make him hate me? Nothing. So in other words, he hated my politics, but he didn't say I hated his politics. He didn't say in the interview I hated his opinions. He said I hated him. And again, I want to ask you, how fair is this? When they interview Saddam Hussein and they kiss his hand, don't say I hate him? They don't even say they object to him killing Kurds? Or they interview Ahmadinejad, the Hitler of our time, and they don't say I hate him or I hate his politics? They call him President Ahmadinejad? Or they interview the dictator Chavez and they say he's the president of Venezuela like he's something wonderful? Don't you understand that liberalism is not only a mental disorder, it is a cowardly, dangerous mental disorder, which is why we are in such trouble? And that's why I gave the interview. I thought maybe I could reach other people with my opinions, but who knows who's going to read it and what they're going to think. So let me go back to the interview here on the Savage Nation. Again, I invite you to call the program if you wish. I mean, I could talk about Kagan again, and that she wrote a speech in 1996, an article that called for the redistribution of speech, saying it is not an illegitimate end for the government to redistribute speech, meaning she's against free speech. Are you shocked at that when you see a mean-faced woman like her? Now, there's a woman I can guarantee you who's dangerous. There's a woman I can guarantee you if you really got to know her, she's hateful. I can guarantee it as I sit here. You're never going to read that anything she said is going to be hateful or disturbing to any of these people whose very careers depend upon freedom of speech. That's the rub right here. Here you have a porno magazine, Playboy, who is all behind Elena Kagan, who's in favor of redistribution of speech, meaning ending the First Amendment as you know it. But then again, who knows? I would think Kagan would probably be in favor of pornography, and she only wants to redistribute conservative opinion, which to them is even worse than pornography. You understand? I've said that for years. I'm going to take a caller so that you can talk. I know many of you want to say things. 1-800-449-8255. Carla in New York. A woman's opinion counts. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael. Look, what's going on here is it's subconscious, but it is absolutely on target. When this guy looked at you, he realized you are the only person in the so-called right side or right-wing media that cannot be controlled. You get guys like Limbaugh, Glenn Beck is the worst. They're all kissing up. They're all doing it for their money. They're all getting along to get along through this whole situation. You're the only one who says it like it is. And he looks at you, and he knows that he cannot co-opt you. So the reason that these people are so
wait, you said he knows that he cannot what me?
Control you. He's not. You're not afraid of him.
Oh, of course I wasn't afraid of him.
Right, but these guys, Glenn Beck, Limbaugh, all of these guys are terrified because they don't want to lose their cushy jobs. So they're all terrified.
I would ask you, how many of those people would ever agree to an interview in their own kitchen without a handler around or without a PR agent standing next to them? I doubt anybody would bring an interviewer into their own house. I did. I wasn't afraid to bring. I have nothing to hide. I brought him in my house to show him exactly who I am and how I live. What do I got to hide? Nothing.
Michael, this is not about you. This is about them controlling the message, and they know that the right-wing media, from the guys on TV to the guys on the radio, are all scared to death. The only one who's not scared to death is you. So
I don't know what anyone feels. I have my fears. Don't get me wrong. I'm not a fool. I'm not bulletproof, and I don't live in a dream world. I have plenty of concerns about taking on a gangster administration. Trust me. I know we're only a hairbreadth away from Venezuela. Trust me on that. If Obama could do it, he would do exactly what Chavez is doing. He would close down opposition TV stations. He would burn newspaper plants. And he would arrest people who oppose him. I know the danger we're in. Believe me, I understand that Junior Doc Duvalier is only waiting for the right moment. Believe me. So don't think I'm sitting here in a dream world here. No, I know the danger we're in, Carla. But what do you think about an interviewer who says, I hated him the whole time? Have you ever seen any of that in an interview before?
The reason he said that is because he hates you, because he cannot control you, and because you're not afraid of them. When I am saying this to you about, and I know you're not in a dream world about what's going on, but the very fact that you could even refer to Obama in such terms as Chavez, that makes you have courage. Do you understand that? None of these.
Well, if we don't speak out now, very shortly we will not be able to speak out at all. That's what I see coming. And I speak to enough ex-Soviets to tell you they see who Obama is. They're not blinded by his double talk, and they're not intimidated by the minority double talk either, that they're afraid of saying one word because they'll be called a racist. They don't buy that crap, and neither do I. I grew up in New York, and let me tell you something. You want to hear something true? This is something I've noticed. Other than in New York, minorities are given a pass in many trials, never in New York. In fact, most of the juries are minority juries, and they always find the person guilty when they're guilty, even if they're a so-called fellow minority. You can't fool people in New York as well as you can fool them out west of the Hudson, apparently. Thanks for the call. I don't want to blow up today. I really don't. But I'm going to continue reading when I come back on when did you lose your virginity on the Savage Nation. I'll be right back. You know, it's not that I'm the only one who's right about things. I'm just right about things before others. Generally, that's been true. So we're talking about the Playboy interview with Michaels. Who is this song? Pop this here by you, my good friend. I forget his name. I'm a little dazed right now. Cannibal Adderley. I got to tell you something. I turned my book into my publisher the other night, 110,000 words in 12 weeks. and I'm kind of spinning. My head is spinning. I mean, I don't know how I do this. I still do. I didn't even take a day off, because what's the point? It's empty out there without radio. Radio is now central to my existence, as you're soon going to hear in the rest of the Playboy interview. But I want to take a few callers as I continue with when I lost my virginity. I know you're all waiting to hear. Jimmy in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I've been hearing you talk about the Playboy magazine and what they did to you. Playboy magazine, there's also the Playboy Foundation. Playboy Foundation funds subversive groups. Playboy Foundation actually helps fund the Institute for Policy Studies, the KGB front group in Washington.
So you're telling me if anyone listening to this show gets lucky at a social event and can go home and sleep with a Playboy bunny, they should be worried that there are hidden microphones in her breasts planted by Goldman Sachs and the Federal Reserve and the Bilderbergs?
I didn't think about that, but hey, that's possible.
The Bilderbergs in the middle of the night snuck into the plastic surgeon's office and put hidden mics inside the silicone gel. All right, Jim, I'm going to go back to reading the interview because I thought that was funny, and I appreciate your good sense of humor. I know everybody wants to hear this. This is not a big deal, big deal. When did you lose your virginity? Playboy, when did you lose your virginity? Wait a minute. Okay, I say I'm a sexual libertarian, so he says, when did you lose your virginity? So, oh, I don't know. How old was I? 19, 18? I don't remember. But I did date a Playboy bunny when I was 17 or 18. Playboy, you did? Savage, yes. I was in college, and she was the sister of a girl I knew. She was ancient. She was 23. And we were all hanging out once, and everyone wanted this Playboy bunny. It wasn't that she was so beautiful. She was pretty enough, but for God's sake, she was a Playboy bunny. That was the epitome, a living goddess. And she chose me. I spent the time with her that afternoon in the apartment. But I glowed for a week as a result. I was like, thank you, Hugh Hefner. Although now she probably has a transfusion tree somewhere if she's still living, or living with a butcher somewhere in Boca Raton. This is not to say anything negative about butchers. I mean, come on now. I mean, it's just, you understand. It's the context. Let's see. Blah, 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 blah. Oh, there's a lot of other stuff in there. Playboy, all that lefty counterculture rabble-rousing, and you're the king of conservatives now? Again, we have to ask, what the hell happened, he says to me. Savage, it all goes back to being a social worker in the most liberal place of all, the Upper West Side of New York, at $1,300 a year as a social worker, and I couldn't afford furniture. I had a mattress on the floor and a coffee table with two cinder bricks, like everyone did in those days. So here I am, a social worker, a college grad, and the effing bums on welfare come into the city department of welfare, and my supervisor says, all right, get out your book. You're going to have to give this bum $300 for a couch, 150 for end tables, 150 bucks for a coffee table, two end chairs, another 65, blah, 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 blah. Write him a check for $4,922 to furnish a state finance welfare home. I said, how can you do that? She said, well, everyone who's civilized needs those furniture items. I said, but I don't have them. She said, well, you're not on welfare. So that's when it started to dawn on me that the system was totally corrupt and upside down. Then I would catch these welfare cheats. Oh, hello, Mrs. Smith. How are you today? And I'd see a pair of men's shoes under the bed. She was supposed to have been living alone getting aid to dependent children. Or I'd hear her phone ring under the bed. They weren't supposed to have a phone. She'd put it under the bed. Everyone was working the system. Playboy, so that explains the radical change? Savage, now this is very important for you to listen to. I don't see myself as having had a radical shift. I'm not much different than I was 30 years ago in my worldview. I'm still the same person who wants to be left into shooting in my life. I don't want it telling me what to do. I resent it telling me what I can say, what I can't think. I don't like the government controlling my food. I don't like it controlling my water. I don't like it controlling everything I do. And I don't like it giving handouts to people who don't want to work for a living. Yeah, look at what's happened. You go on an airplane, you give up all your civil rights. Why? Because an effing Islamic fascist blew up a plane, so the whole world now went into a tilt, and they still can't stop them? Look at the underwear bomber. With all this garbage, the guy can still get on and set his eunuch on fire on an airplane. And I go on here on the Savage Nation and Playboy.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. God, that's pretty good. Who is this music? Yeah, he was great. So I go on, look at the underwear bomber. With all this garbage, the guy could still get on and set his yogurt on fire on the airplane. If it weren't for the Flying Dutchman, he would have blown up the plane. We should have given him a medal for saving the people, but no. That would have made government officials look like the incompetent idiots they are. Secretary of Homeland Security Janet Napolitano would have been in a barrel. Playboy, is the Obama administration doing right in your opinion? You hear the question? So here's my answer. I agree with Obama on regulating bankers. They're out of control. Even the banks will tell you that. But in general, I think there's going to be more voter remorse with Obama than with any other president in history, especially since so many conservative Republicans voted for him in opposition to McCain and Bush. I heard the idiots. They said, oh, it's better to elect Obama and teach the Republicans a lesson. Well, look what we ended up with. I mean, Obama's a great package, a good-looking guy, very appealing, but you find out it's all fury and sound and nothing else. And he's leading the country down the road of socialism and left-wing morass. Do you realize Obama couldn't have been cleared to be his own Secret Service agent? As you know, to become an FBI or a Secret Service agent, there's a very strict set of rules, one of which is based on your past associations. Let's forget the birthing issue. I won't go there. His association with Bill Ayers alone would have disqualified him. His association for 20 years in Reverend Wright's church, the Reverend Wright who said the government gave AIDS to the black man, end of interview. End of interview. What do you mean, end of interview? I don't know. What are your thoughts on the Tea Party movement? He goes on. Savaged. I've always liked tea. But this movement is largely composed of middle-class business owners who know the government, Republicans, and Dems are bankrupting the nation. They see the threat from this Marxist-oriented president, his drive to nationalize many aspects of the private sector, from GM and AIG to our banks and health care. They know global warming and the associated cap-and-trade legislation are gigantic Ponzi schemes built on false science, and they know this hasn't stopped Obama from heating up his plan to expand federal funding of global warming research, already pegged at $2 billion. The tea parties in the town halls are all saying what I've been saying on the radio. It's the true voice of America, not the left-wing rent-a-mobs we've seen for the past three decades. That's why the tea parties both shock and frighten the left-wing media. These are real people, really angry. Savage. Playboy, do you have a solution? You recently toyed with the idea of running for office. And I'll get back to that in a minute on the Savage Nation. I want to take some of your callers. Rose in New York City on WOR. Are you enjoying the interview, Rose?
Yes. Good evening, Michael. I want to be brief because I know you have other callers waiting to get on. I could tell you in a nutshell what his whole problem is. He's insanely jealous of you.
How can you discern that?
Because of hate. Now, with hate comes jealousy, and he probably is more jealous of you than hates you, but he don't want to admit it. Your intellect, your followers that listen to you, and I'll tell you another thing. You'll probably increase their sales by a booming amount. Because
that's yeah. Well, that's why they interviewed me. They knew that they could sell magazines. The New Yorker did, and they sold out the magazine as a result of interviewing me. See, but the New Yorker did it in an intelligent manner. They didn't agree with me, the interviewer, necessarily. But he didn't come out in the front and say, I hated Michael Savage. Even if he did, he wouldn't say it. He was smart enough not to say it. You know what I'm saying? He could have said, I detested his politics. But he didn't say that. He said he hated the man. How could he hate the man? What did I do?
First of all, he's so insanely jealous of you that his jealousy is turning to hate, and he's going to wind up with all kinds of sicknesses and ulcers and every other thing.
It's interesting you say that, because I've never seen an interviewer right up front say, I hated the man.
Well, he's had this hatred, but the jealousy, I think, is stronger than his hatred, even though he says he hates you.
Well, he does say, listen to this, he does give himself away in your regard in the early on when he says, he has a number of homes and fancy cars and a big 63-foot boat. It could be pure, unadulterated jealousy. It's possible.
He's probably had this jealousy for a long time.
Yeah, but I didn't take it from anybody. No one gave it to me, and I didn't take it from the government. Maybe that's the reason liberals hate the people who earn something.
To buy the magazine, not because I like
Yeah, well, whatever. You know, look, this isn't the be-all and end-all of my existence. It's another interview. It'll be the last or the next, there'll be another one, you know, whatever. I have a friend who's at Cannes Film Festival right now who's a movie producer. He's a very conservative man. He still wants to do the Savage Nation movie, and he probably wants me to do it, and I've said no for 2 years, and I've been worn out from the British thing. But now that Cameron's in and we're doing another appeal, thanks to your help, thanks to listeners like you who have contributed to the Savage Legal Fund, my lawyers are going to make an appeal to the government. We'll see if that works. Then I'll have more energy freed up for a movie, and I might do it. I might not do it. New York, WOR. Ruth, go ahead. Your opinion, please.
Hi, Michael. This is one of your most fabulous savagettes, and I adore you. The last, just want to say this before I tell you why I think you said the word hate. The last time I spoke to you, I won't say the second part of the statement. It was the bigger the Kafka. We'll leave.
The bigger the Kafka, the bigger the Nafka.
You told me not to say it, and I once said if I were the second part of that, I'd be mad.
Actually, it was the bigger the Klafka, the bigger the Nafka, but go on.
To say, you said he was a smart man. Anyway, I adore you. I want to tell you why I think he said it, this mumsa.
Why did he say? You sound like ex-Mayor Koch's mother.
I'm from Boston, and when you play Desafinada, there's no one in the world whose arms I'd rather be in than yours dancing to that. That's all I can say.
That's sweet.
Oh, it's fabulous.
So come on now. Let's get back to the article.
He hates his mother because his mother...
Hold on. Knock the music off. Say it again. They cut you off. Go ahead.
Where was I?
Just start again. He hates me. Why?
Hates you because his mother is in love with you. She keeps selling, telling him, why can't you be more like him? It's all a hidden. He's terrible.
Oh my God, yeah, Ruth! You see, you're from the old school. You're pre-psychiatry because you knew what was going on. You didn't need to go to a shrink.
That's the reason. That's my opinion.
I can guarantee you that this caller never didn't need to go to a shrink. She knew what was going on without them. You. Mm-hmm. Did you ever go to therapy, Ruth?
No, but I'd love to go anywhere in the world with you. It's all right.
Well, I'm not inviting you to see my therapist, Ruth. Cut it out.
Anywhere that you say, if it weren't for you, my life...
Ruth, let me ask you, Ruth. Were you married at some point in your life?
Was, but I should have been married at least more than twice, but it's...
Oh, you're a tough one. You're a tough one. What were your husbands like?
I don't hear you on the program. My night is... is endless and.
But Ruth, sad. what were your husbands like, Ruth? What kind of guys were they?
I only had one. I said okay. I should have been married a lot of.
All right, but what was he like? What kind of man was he?
Oh, he was just a wonderful boy from New York. I'm from Boston originally, and I came here to get married, and I.
But weren't you too tough for him?
I was because.
See.
Yeah, I was.
That's why you like my show because it's all electronic.
All I know is at the end.
Thanks, honey. It's all electronic, and you can shut me off anytime. Oh, boy. So is there something that you guys want to say that hasn't been said yet? Here's Drew in San Francisco, 860 on the dial. Drew, go ahead, please. What's on your mind?
Hey, thanks, Michael. You know, the psychology of this even gets deeper. You know, he gave you a quote from a teacher saying that if you don't like somebody, it's probably because you see part of yourself in them. And then this guy turns around and says he hates you. So he's kind of exposing himself. He must...
Oh, my God, I didn't even see that.
See part
right.
of himself in...
So in other words, he hates me because he actually admires me? Is that it? You mean because I'm so firm in my opinions and can back it up with logic and facts? Is that what bothers him? He doesn't associate with people who can do that? Is that the part that gets to him?
I'm sure it even goes deeper than that, my friend.
Well, it's sad in a way. Look, I have no feelings about this man one way or the other. I'll never see him again. I think he condemned himself by putting a thing like that out in a magazine saying I hated the subject is not a very good reflection on him or the magazine. I got to say that. I'm not trying to be Reagan-esque here, but I think there's something. He made a big error here. That's my opinion. Drew, I don't think he's going to be happy with this 5 years from now.
No matter what he said, I think it was a wise move on your part because you are going to reach an audience that you might not otherwise. So I'm looking forward to the results of this move on your part.
The difference is, though, is I'm not made of silicon. No part of my body is made of silicon.
You can always change that.
Silicon Valley and all of that. I mean, what What is this Savage showed interview? Okay, Sacramento, Sal, you're calling about the interview saying he hated me. Sal, go ahead, please.
I think the man really does hate you, and he does because you and others like you represent a direct contrast to his failure in life as a human being.
Ooh. You mean it goes beyond my politics?
Absolutely. I mean, you represent everything that he is not, and he actually admires you, and he hates you because you represent the contrast to his failure in life.
Wow. Well, it's probably true. These guys don't make, they don't make a lot of money. They struggle, and so maybe he feels my success is something I'm not deserving of. How dare you make money or something like that? I mean, maybe that's what his problem is. I don't get it.
Well, that and me, and also just your sense of your value system.
Yeah. In other words, how dare you have values that my father would have had, or how dare you have values that built America? They're passé. I'm with Playboy. We don't believe in those things. We hate you. Is that what he's saying, like a child?
Exactly.
Well, it's a sad commentary on our time that an interviewer has to revert to that level.
Yeah.
Sal, thank you for listening on KSTE. By the way, I want to make this little note. I'm on in San Francisco. I'm on Extra Sports 860. However, many afternoons I am preempted for sports, and they replay me the next morning from 6 to 9 a.m. the entire show with no preemptions. However, the days I'm preempted, if you want, you can switch right over to 650 out of Sacramento and pick up the rest of the show. People are doing it, so I'm just telling you what people are doing. That's all. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Shall I pick up where I left off? Savage, Playboy. Playboy says, you recently toyed with the idea of running for office, Savage. I have toyed with it because I think I could win. I could easily win a congressional seat, but I don't want to be a politician. Ever. I don't have the nature for it. Let's say I win, okay? One, forget the hard campaign. I have to live in Washington. I hate flying. I hate Washington. I like living here. I'd have to sit through meetings. I don't have the patience for meetings. I can't do groupthink. I'm not good in circles where I listen to everyone's opinion and go, It wasn't running for office that scared me. It was winning. I'd rather sit home and talk to my dog and my listeners. Playboy. Savage, you have an audience in the millions. How do you explain your appeal? Now, this is very interesting. Shall I answer that one? Here's my own view of it. I don't know. First of all, I have a cantor's voice. A cantor is a ritual singer. First of all, I have a cantor's voice. I have a magnetic voice. I know that because I'm walking the dog and I'm talking. People look up and respond to the resonance of my voice. It has a command, a stopping power to it. And I believe I'm extremely capable of taking complex ideas and throwing a lightning bolt of connections in one phrase. People love that. Combine that with the down-to-earth guy in the street, let's talk food, I got a headache, and here's my dog, ordinary guy stuff, and that's the mix. Plus, I'm a party of one, I'm not a Republican, I'm not a Democrat. My parents were Democrats because they were poor who thought FDR was God. Okay, he created the WPA, and my father had a job. Had I joined the Republican Party when I was young, it would have been like joining the Nazi Party. A lot of poor people today still feel the same way, even some rich people. Republicans are still Nazis to them. Me, I'm not a Republican because I don't like their politics, and I know they're a bunch of crooks. Look at what Bush did. He was an embarrassment. The man couldn't complete a sentence without mangling words. Not that being articulate is the end all. Look at Obama. My listeners appreciate that I'm not a mouthpiece for either party. Playboy, are the people who listen to your show people you'd like to hang out with? I'll answer that when I come back on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Mambo, Mambo Italiano. Hey, Mambo, Mambo Italiano. Go, go, go. You mixed up a Siciliano. All you Calabrese do the
I'm going to skip around a little bit in the interview. We'll continue more of this later on and tomorrow on the Savage Nation. Michael Savage here reading about the redistribution of reality as attempted by Playboy magazine in their 8,000-word interview with me. So he asks me, Playboy says, let's shift gears and play the name game with your media cohorts. What do you think of Bill O'Reilly, Savage? I think O'Reilly is a phony. He has a background in entertainment. He's very smart. He has a good education. I give him that. He does a good job in his delivery, but he is very one-dimensional. It's either black or white with him, and there's no in-between. Also, don't forget that O'Reilly failed at radio, which shows you how hard this is to do. Playboy. Rush Limbaugh. Savage. I don't know how Rush Limbaugh has an audience. I just don't know. I don't like anyone who was a water carrier for Bush all those years and now pretends he wasn't. I know he was deeply enmeshed in the Republican Party and George Bush. I mean, he has a right to do that, but don't pretend you're not a mouthpiece for them. Playboy, what do you think of Glenn Beck? Savage. Glenn Beck is a laughingstock. The mark of the uneducated man? He has a blackboard. He plays professor half the time. What's with the chalk? He didn't go to college, so he's making up for it by playing professor on television? Playboy, what's your biggest complaint about him? That's all. Other than that, nothing. What about Rachel Maddow? Savage. Oh, clutches heart. Aside from being physically unappealing, she thinks an ironic statement is intelligent. Her statements all have an ironic ending like, you know, as though she's still in a sorority house or a college beer bust, where every statement ends with irony. There's a reason she has the lowest ratings of all the people on cable. Now ask me about the brain damage Keith Olbermann. Playboy, go for it. He's a sad man. He's totally crazy. I think there's actually something wrong with the guy. I mean, he gets so worked up in ways that are inappropriate for the situation. With the hatred. The world's worst person, he says, is me? Or Sean Hannity or O'Reilly? Not Osama bin Laden? Not a guy who just blew up 50 people in Iraq? It's a media competitor who's the worst person on the earth? That's the world's worst person? How do they let him get away with it? But there's actually someone worse than Keith Olbermann. The fraud of frauds, Chris Matthews. He's been a Democratic operative all of his life. He worked for Tip O'Neill. He should have a warning label like, this cigarette is known to cause cancer. He should have a label like, this spokesman worked for the Democrat National Committee. Playboy. Okay, two more. John Stewart and Stephen Colbert. I'll answer that simply. If it weren't for the smart guys with the curly hair and the big eyeglasses writing for them, behind the scenes they'd be nothing. Let them try 3 hours of improvisational radio every day for 15 years. We'll see how smart and how sharp they are. Anyone can take great lines and deliver them if they have a good delivery system. Do they write their own stuff? I know they don't, because when the writers went on strike, they were off the air. And the Colbert Nation? Gee, where do you get that from? Playboy, by the way, does talk radio have a bright future? Savage. I'm surprised it's still surviving, giving all the media options. It's probably still the best vehicle for people to feel connected while commuting in a car. The friendly voice, he's joking. 1 minute he's railing against the political structure. The next minute he's playing with his dog. That's me. A little science, poetry, art. And for conservatives, Obama's making the radio business very easy. Even morons can do it. Again, take a look at Glenn Beck. Playboy, did you cry when you heard Air America died? Ha, it was never born. It was a bunch of liberals preaching to other liberals. Nobody cared. Aren't you preaching to the choir, too? One would assume that's true, but I was off the air in the Bay Area for a few months this year, and the feedback from industry people was that liberals missed me. That may sound crazy, but I offer an alternative to what they see or hear in their own world. Sure, maybe they listened and said, ah, he's wrong, and shut it off. But the next day, they couldn't wait to turn the Savage Nation on again. A lot of it has to do with the variance I throw at them. I'll go from politics to tonight's meal to complaining about a heart attack, cuddles his poodle, to old Teddy. Teddy, you're a good stunt. He asks, would you still be doing radio 5 years from now? I'll stop right here. And we'll continue, you know, later on tomorrow with more from the Savage Nation interview in the Playboy magazine. And we'll pick it up from there. And you'll have to ask yourself why a writer would go out of his way to say I hate him when he doesn't know me. And notice he didn't say I hate his politics or his opinions. He said I hate him. And he said he thought I hated him when, as you just heard earlier, I played a piece that I recorded right after the interview where I said I thought he was a nice guy. So you talk about paranoia and the projection of hatred. It doesn't get any worse than he. For me, it's Michael Savage.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The big news today is Michael Savage, as usual, is my show. And the Playboy interview came out today online. 8,000 words, but the editor gave himself away by saying he hated me. He says, I can't remember a more difficult interview. Savage was a fine host, but his opinions were extreme and I hated him. Now, I find that amazing that a journalist, so-called, would say he hated the person he was interviewing, because he didn't say that to me. He sure acted like he liked me. I think this goes to the whole point of the liberal media. They're weasels, they're cowards, and they're liars. I knew it would be a hit piece from day one. I wouldn't expect anything else from Playboy, but on the other hand, I figured maybe I could set the record straight, because even people who like breasts sometimes have reason. And so therefore, I agreed to the interview. And, of course, it's out this Friday in a on the stands in a 3D edition. It's going to be read by a lot of people. And they'll probably get the wrong impression of me in some regard and the right impression of me in some regard. But, hey, I'm a controversial celebrity, right? And so, therefore, I can't expect myself to be who I really am in the media. I am who I am. Like me or don't like me, that's all. Meanwhile, it's me they're writing about, and that's why I have an audience that's so large. And we are talking about the Michael Savage Playboy interview on the Savage Nation over the next few days. We're reading from the article. In fact, let me read you the opening line here. Interviewer, Playboy, why are you so angry? Savage, do I look angry? Playboy, a little. You definitely sound angry. Well, I get worked up. First of all, I get angry because I can't believe it lets every group in the world come here. Please let us in. Fine. Let us come in on asylum because our country will kill us. No problem. Then the minute they get here, they turn around and sue the country, make demands on the country, won't learn the language, won't salute the flag, and all they do is disparage the country. I guess Playboy didn't like that, Beowulf. I guess they wanted me to get on my hands and knees and say, bring in a few more million.
I guess they figured that you're going to be like all their other sycophantic interviews, but no dice.
Are most of the others, do they bend over backwards to try to look nice? Is that it?
I think a lot of them do. I think they.
Well, I didn't bend over backwards. He got who I really am. You know what? The teapot is boiling in the radio studio. Give me a break. Do you know what's happening around the world? Have you seen what's happening in Greece? Do you know what's happening with the economy? Europe bailed them out to the tune of $1 trillion, and on Tuesday, gold went to $1,220 an ounce. $1,220 an ounce. But if you look at the inflation-adjusted prices over the past 30 years, gold could go much higher than that. I've told you about my great advertiser, Swiss America, on this program before. You should reach out to them. SwissAmerica.com. The Greeks waited for a bailout, and stocks are still falling. You shouldn't make the same mistake. Don't wait. Swiss America, now. So, to go back to the article, it'll be read over the next 3 days. And some of the questions are reasonable, some are absurd. And a lot of it was about subjects that are so boring I don't even want to repeat them. Let's see. I don't know where to begin here. He asks me about global warming, and I tell him it's all a lie. And he says, so you're saying nearly 50 major scientific societies, including every National Academy of Science on Earth, are making this stuff up? Why would they? Savage. Control. Money. You know how many billions of dollars are invested now in green technology? And you know how many hundreds of... And if anyone didn't go along with it, they were cast out of the whole scientific establishment. They were the heretics. No funding, no research, you're fired. Playboy says, you must be a joy to sit with at dinner parties. Savage laughs. I don't go to them. Or if I do, I'm miserable. And I talk about going to a certain famous club. And I say, mostly at social gatherings, I'm morose. I sometimes crave people, but then I get there and it's chaotic and unfocused. and I want to leave. I get rattled around people. I'll be frank with you. Do you have any friends? Friends? What is that? What does it mean? We all end up alone. Then he says, do you have any neighbors you could borrow butter from? And I say, it would be nice to have friends on the block, but that's not the case. You know, it's kind of almost childish and stupid, by the way.
Borrow butter? Who even does that in this day and age?
I don't know. Would you borrow butter from anybody? Especially from a guy who talks so much about AIDS?
I like my next-door neighbors, but not that much.
All right, here's one more, and then we'll go on to other stuff on the Savage Nation. Do you have a solution to all these problems? You recently toyed with the idea of running for office. Savage, I have toyed with it because I think I could win. I could win a congressional seat, but I don't want to be a politician, ever. I don't have the nature for it. Let's say you win, okay? One, forget the hard campaign. You have to live in Washington. I hate flying. I hate Washington. I like living here. I'd have to sit through meetings. I don't have the patience for meetings. I can't do groupthink. I'm not good in circles where I listen to everyone's opinion and go, mm-hmm. It wasn't running that scared me. It was winning. I'd rather sit home and talk to my dog and my listeners. Playboy, you have an audience in the millions of people. How do you explain your appeal? I don't know. First of all, I have a cantor's voice. I have a magnetic voice. I know that because if I'm walking the dog and I'm talking, people look up and respond to the resonance of my voice. It has a command, a stopping power. And I believe I'm extremely capable of taking complex ideas and throwing a lightning bolt of connections in one phrase. People love that. Combine that with a down-to-earth guy in the street, let's talk food, I got a headache, and here's my dog, ordinary guy stuff, and that's the mix. Plus, I'm a party of one. I'm not a Republican, I'm not a Democrat. My parents were Democrats because they were poor Jews who thought FDR was God. Okay, he created the WPA, and my father had a job. Had I joined the Republican Party, it would have been like joining the Nazi Party. A lot of Jews today still feel the same way, even rich Jews. Republicans are still Nazis to them. Me? I'm not a Republican because I don't like their politics, and I know they're a bunch of crooks. Look at what Bush did. He was an embarrassment. The man couldn't complete a sentence without mangling words. Not that being articulate is the end-all. Look at Obama. My listeners appreciate that I'm not a mouthpiece for either party. Are the people listening to your show people you'd like to hang out with? Savage. No. A couple of rules of radio. Never accept listener food. Dear Mike, we love you. That is why we baked you this lasagna. You know it's got poison in it. My first program director taught me that. For the same reason, I never accept listener wine, even though I love wine. And I try never to socialize with listeners. Maybe they're nice people. Some of them look like people I like to know, but I really don't have time to get involved. This is the Savage Nation, heard across America on, 300 states, who knows? Hundreds and hundreds of stations, millions and millions of people, tuning in every day to find out what I'm going to say next, what I said next, what did he say before, what does he think, do I love him today, do I not love him, is he happy, is he sad, am I happy, am I sad, I have no life, it's his life, where is he, Area 53, Area 54, Area 55. Joining us now with a Savage Nation exclusive is Jack Hunter.
Good to be with you this evening, Michael. What I wanted to talk about is what some might call conservatism in exile. Now, a lot of you talk radio listeners out there have heard that phrase, and Michael, I'm sure you know what I'm referring to. And I'm not talking about the narrative put out by the man who sort of made that phrase popular, but a more realistic narrative when it comes to us conservatives and what we want to get out of politics. And mainly, what I'm going to talk about right now is the Republican Party. We had a situation where Bob Bennett, who many people considered a very conservative Republican, he was defeated in his race, and a lot of people are saying, well, how can this happen? Are the Tea Partiers, you know, really showing their muscle where they are? I want to take the task of those who think the Tea Partiers are going too far. Bob Bennett lost that race primarily because of his support for TARP, the Troubled Assets Relief Program. Kathleen Parker, who is a allegedly conservative columnist for the Washington Post and is a syndicated columnist, wrote an article defending Bob Bennett. She noted that he has an 84% rating from the American Conservative Union, is ranked high by the National Rifle Association, and was upset at the Tea Partiers for wanting to get rid of this guy who she thought was conservative on many levels because he supported TARP. Now, I think that is a damn good litmus test for grassroots conservatives. Any Republican who supported TARP needs to go. I don't care if you're a Bob Bennett and you have this sort of establishment connections. I even think Kathleen Parker mentions that Bob Bennett was endorsed by, and she says, this is a quote, establishment Republicans Newt, Mitt, and Carl, which is Newt Gingrich, Mitt Romney, and Karl Rove. That, to her, is reason to keep a guy like that. I want to make the argument that that is even more reason that guys like that need to go. We conservatives have really sold ourselves short for a number of years. You know, people say that Barack Obama is the most socialist president in American history, and you know what? That is absolutely right. Barack Obama is the biggest big government president in American history, by and far. You know who was the biggest big government president before Barack Obama? George W. Bush. You know who was the biggest big government president before Bush and Obama? It was Bill Clinton, and before that, George H.W. Bush Sr. Somehow, despite which party is in office, the government gets bigger, we spend more money, and things are getting out of control.
Exactly.
The idea that we need to go back to just voting for Republicans we would have in the past, like a Bob Bennett, for example, is completely insane. Let me give you this scenario, talking about conservatism in exile, because we've certainly been in exile, just not in the way some people mean. Let me give you the scenario. Imagine George W. Bush never existed, and we went straight from Bill Clinton to Barack Obama. When Barack Obama came in office in the year 2000, he did everything George W. Bush did. He started the Iraq War, implemented the Patriot Act, he doubled the national debt, he expanded Medicare, he enacted No Child Left Behind, he pushed through TARP, the whole bit. Do you think that a lot of the other talkers, you and I are the same, Michael, we take the GOP to task when they need to, but do you think a lot of the other talk radio guys or establishment Republicans would have been championing a Barack Obama if he had a Bush-style agenda? If he had done all those things, I bet they would. It needs to go beyond partisanship. Let me give you one better. A lot of the conservatives in 2008, like Mitt Romney, that was their guy. They thought he would have been a great candidate. Could you imagine if Mitt Romney was elected in 2008 and had the exact same agenda as Barack Obama, including national health care, which is based on Romney Care, the Massachusetts plan? Could you imagine the same people who are saying conservatism is in exile and we need to get behind the Republicans to stop Obama bashing Republican President Mitt Romney? I bet they wouldn't, and that's my point. The idea that we just need to unite behind the Republican Party despite what kind of Republican we're supporting, and that will finally stop the growth of government, is a narrative that is not only untrue, but has done nothing for conservatives in the long run.
Hmm.
Let me outline a little more what I'm talking about here, because it really, as a conservative, it bothers me, this idea that if we just have to start voting for Republicans, that's how we're going to get ahead. That's not the way to do it. We need to support particular Republicans, somebody who's really shown, you know, that they're worth it when it comes to spending and all that. But Bob Bennett and all those guys, it should be a new day for them. Let me give you another example. A very popular talk host, who you all will often say Michael is known for smoking cigars and such, wrote in his 1993 book about Bill Clinton. He said, "Get ready, folks, for the biggest confiscation of your money ever by the government. Franklin Delano Roosevelt and Lyndon Johnson looked like pikers compared to this guy." Who was the author talking about? He was talking about Bill Clinton. He was saying he was going to be the biggest big government president we've ever had, and socialism's here, and yada, yada, yada. Well, McClatchy News Service in 2007 reported that no president had spent more money since LBJ than President Bush. So, in other words, compared to George H.W. Bush, Bill Clinton looks like a piker, if you see what I'm getting at.
I see what you mean.
Look, Bill Clinton was awful. He's every bit the socialist that author said he was. My point is, so was George W. Bush. So is Obama. If you had a Republican in there doing what Obama was doing right now, would many of these partisans who pretend to be conservatives be standing up and clapping and saying, "Well, I don't agree with everything, but we do need to support this guy. It would have been much worse if the Democrat had won." It needs to be a new day. The Tea Partiers have the right idea. We need to not vote for Republicans who voted for TARP. We need to be so extreme, as they put it, to not vote for any of these guys who continuously expand government despite what political brand or label it's under. We don't need to do that anymore. Kathleen Parker says Bob Bennett should have stayed in office because he's a good conservative despite TARP, and even offering up a health insurance plan that including an insurance mandate? No, ma'am. He needed to go, and establishment Republicans just like him, they all need to go. It's a new day, and thank God for that.
True.
My biggest fear when this whole Tea Party movement took off, I guess it was about tax day last year, was really the beginning of it in 2009, is that these people would be co-opted into just to being Republican partisans again. That some of the talk radio guys, as they're doing now, let's face it, you know, you and I, Michael, we beat up on the Republican Party. We say, look, you have not been conservative here. You are not following through on what Republicans supposedly believe in. But a lot of our peers, I'm a much, you know, different, a lot of the conservatives, self-described conservatives, just want to pull these grassroots conservatives back into the GOP fold. They want them to vote happily for guys like John McCain, or down here in South Carolina where I live, Lindsey Graham. That's what they would love. My greatest fear is that they will become that again. That's not what I'm saying. They're staying independent. And the Bob Bennett election, that he was ousted. Kathleen Parker, thank you. Yes, he was ousted. I'm sorry. You don't like that? That's exactly what needs to happen. That is proof that the Tea Partiers are remaining independent and are fighting for true conservatism, and that's where they need to stay.
Thanks for the report, Jack.
It was good to talk to you again, Michael. And for more, you can go visit SouthernAvenger.com.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
Joining us now with an exclusive Savage Nation report is Eric Stackelbeck.
Hey, Michael, thank you. It's always a pleasure to be here. Well, we have a very disturbing story for you this week. It involves Iran and the international police organization, Interpol. Now, Michael, we know that Iran is notorious for stifling dissent inside their country. Obviously, we saw last June when we had the massive demonstrations against the Iranian regime there after the election fraud in which Ahmadinejad won re-election as president. We saw a million people take to the streets, and the aftermath of that was obviously quite ugly. We saw people murdered. We saw people tortured. There's still people in prison right now. There's been reports of dissidents being raped in Iranian prisons. I've personally spoken to Iranian dissidents who have been abused, tortured. It's just an awful, awful situation there. There is no dissent. There is no free speech in Iran. That goes without saying. But here's the deal. Iran is trying to not only enforce their unique standards of free speech inside Iran, they are now targeting dissidents overseas. Iranians who have left Iran and live in Europe or the U.S. or Australia and now speak out against the regime are now being targeted by Ahmadinejad and the mullahs. Now, there is some background here, Michael. During the 1980s, under Khomeini, the Iranians in Europe, there were several Iranian expats living in Europe who were very vocally against the Islamic Revolution, against the Ayatollah Khomeini. Well, Khomeini sent some of his thugs and acolytes into Europe to assassinate dissidents. There were a number of murders in the 1980s on European soil of Iranian dissidents. These murders were carried out by the Iranian regime. Europe basically shrugged its shoulders, moved on, and continued to strike gas and oil deals with Iran. But this is what happened. Now we have a situation today under Ahmadinejad and the new supreme leader, Khamenei, where Iran is once again targeting dissidents overseas. They're doing it in Europe, and they're doing it, Michael, right here in the U.S., in California, not all that far from your studio in Los Angeles, a guy by the name of Shahram Humayun. Now, this is a prominent Iranian dissident. He fled here 19 years ago from Tehran. He holds a U.S. green card. He's a U.S. legal resident. Been here 19 years. He owns his own satellite TV network called Channel One TV.
Hmm.
And what he does is he beams pro-democracy programming into Iran on a daily basis, calling for people, you know, telling people about how great women's rights, human rights are, telling people to push for democracy. Never does this man call for violence against the Iranian regime. Never has he called for acts of terrorism or acts of violence against the mullahs. Well, that doesn't matter to Iran. He needs to be silenced at any cost. The Iranian regime recently, a prosecutor in Iran back in March, issued an arrest warrant for Humayun, a guy who lives in Los Angeles, issued an arrest warrant for him, charging him with acts of terrorism. Now, the irony here, Michael, is obviously delicious. You have the world's biggest terrorist regime, which funds terrorism, Hamas, Hezbollah, even has some dealings with al-Qaeda and the Taliban, the biggest terrorist regime in the world, a regime on the State Department's list of sponsors of terror, accusing someone of terrorism. It's just too ironic to be believed. And Shahram Humayun is anything but a terrorist. He's a TV host. He's a peaceful, pro-democracy dissident. Normally, Michael, when Iran would pull a stunt like this, you could shrug your shoulders and say, hey, the Iranians are up to their tricks again. They're trying to intimidate the guy, whatever. But here's the disturbing wrinkle this time. Iran went to Interpol. Now, Interpol is the International Police Organization. I guess a simple way to describe it, it's kind of the UN of law enforcement agencies. There's 188 member countries that belong to Interpol, including the U.S., including Iran. They're both members. Iran, as a member country, went to Interpol and gave them the arrest warrant against Shahram Humayun. Interpol reviewed the warrant. Now, normally, you would think Interpol common sense would say, this is a bogus charge. It's obviously politically motivated. Interpol says, Interpol reps in France, where it's headquartered, Michael, tell me, hey, we don't get involved in political matters. They couldn't comment on Humayun's case, but they said, hey, politics isn't our thing. Well, Iran's charges against Humayun are obviously politically motivated. They want to silence the guy because he's a political dissident. So you figure Interpol, considering the source, Ahmadinejad, would kind of throw this arrest warrant out. Instead, Interpol, after reviewing the Iranian arrest warrant against Shahram Humayun for terrorism of all things, Interpol goes ahead and issues what's known as a red notice against Shahram Humayun.
What is that?
What a red notice is, basically, it's an alert to all 188 member countries of Interpol around the world to be on the lookout. Be on the lookout for this guy, Shahram Humayun. He's wanted for terrorism. It's unbelievable. Basically, what you have a situation here is Iran is manipulating Interpol to act against dissidents overseas, including right here on American soil. And Interpol, for whatever reason, is allowing itself to be used by the Iranians and to be duped by the Iranians. It's unexplainable, and really, it boggles the mind that Interpol would take the claims of a terrorist regime like Iran seriously. Now, Humayun, obviously, Shahram Humayun, the poor guy out in L.A., he's rattled. This has turned his life upside down. He found out about this Interpol red notice against him on charges of terrorism when he got a call, Michael, from his local bank out in L.A. He'd been a member in good standing of this bank for 10 years. He had positive account balance. The bank called him and said, hey, you are on Interpol's list of wanted terrorists. Humayun couldn't believe it. Next thing he knows, his bank account is closed down. He tries to open an account at another bank in L.A. They won't accept him. They won't take his account. Then his wife goes to open an account. Once they found out that she was married to Humayun, they said no thanks, wouldn't even allow his wife to open a bank account. So he's kind of persona non grata right now because of this Interpol red notice against him, and he's obviously afraid, Michael, to leave this country. He's afraid if he goes to London or France or someplace in Europe, he's afraid that he will be arrested because of this international Interpol red notice against him. It's absolutely one of the most outrageous stories I've heard in some time, and Iran is laughing all the way to the bank here. They're manipulating Interpol into striking out against Iranian dissidents overseas. So not only are they going to stifle dissent at home, they're going to stifle dissent overseas using an international body.
That's crazy. Sorry, crazy.
Now, we first heard about Interpol back in December. A lot of Americans, at least, probably couldn't even tell you what Interpol is until December, when President Obama issued a very controversial executive order granting Interpol greater powers here in the U.S. Basically, Interpol now is not subject to any of the same restrictions that domestic law enforcement agencies like the FBI, the DEA are on American soil. Interpol now, after President Obama issued this red notice, Interpol now is not subject to the Freedom of Information Act. Interpol is not subject, its offices, which are located, they share an office with the Department of Justice here in Washington, D.C., no search and seizure at their offices. So Interpol basically has free rein on U.S. soil. Now, I talked to the head of Interpol in Washington, D.C., and he said, look, the executive order that Obama signed in December, which really came out of the blue, that executive order will have no bearing on what Interpol does here in the U.S. We just are an intelligence-sharing operation, and that's really the point of Interpol, Michael, internationally. You're not going to have Interpol agents arresting you, running you down. Basically, what Interpol does is they share information with different Interpol branches around the world about, say, a drug smuggler, a terrorist, a kidnapper. So that is their role.
Mm-hmm.
But they say, look, it's not going to expand any activities here in the U.S. But you have to wonder. I mean, this is an administration, and there's no surprise that there was an outcry when he signed this executive order among many conservatives, because this is an administration, Michael, obviously, that is all about not only big government here, but this is a very internationalist administration with Obama. This is a guy who is a UN guy. He's a guy who I think down the line will push for the International Criminal Court, Law of the Sea Treaty, all these international bodies which will weaken U.S. sovereignty. I think Obama is on board with 100%, and I think this giving Interpol greater powers on U.S. soil goes along with that. Now, the administration, since they signed this executive order back in December, have really downplayed it and said, hey, you know, Interpol, nothing's going to change. And the folks at Interpol told me the same thing. But you have to wonder, this was really a shot in the dark. Why sign this order out of nowhere, giving Interpol these greater freedoms on American soil that even the FBI and our own domestic law enforcement agencies don't have? So let's bring it full circle, Michael. Shahram Humayun right now, you can go on Interpol's website. There's a big, fat red notice right on their website with his mugshot, his picture, I should say, on their website saying he's wanted for terrorism in Iran. It's still there. And now Humayun is a guy now, he can't leave the country. He continues to broadcast his program every day into Iran, calling for democracy. He tells me that the FBI has reassured him, hey, you're fine, no one's going to bother you on American soil. But this sets just a horrific precedent. Iran now has gained confidence that if they approach international bodies like Interpol, that they're going to get action, that Interpol will act on their behalf.
This is unbelievable to me.
Now, talking to the Interpol folks in Lyon, France, where the organization is headquartered, they really didn't give me a straight answer. They said, look, we can't comment on specific cases. The one woman in their media department, one of their spokesmen, said, look, there's 188 different member countries with 188 different perspectives. But we have to lump, I think, obviously, Iran, Syria, Sudan, jihadist, genocidal, terrorist regimes like that should obviously be held to a different standard than the United States, Europe, and Israel. But one last thing to keep in mind here, Michael, let's see how this all plays out with Humayun's case and with this Interpol situation in general, because apparently Iran is also targeting dissidents in Europe using Interpol warrants. But the final thing to keep in mind is that U.S. taxpayer dollars go towards Interpol. I'm sure a good chunk of Interpol is funded by we don't have hard numbers. The Interpol people in France tell me 81% of Interpol's funding comes from member countries. And the U.S. pays a good chunk of that, I'm sure, our taxpayer dollars. And also the U.S. is on the executive committee of Interpol. So I find it hard to believe that the administration, that no one in the U.S. government knew about this red notice against Shahram Humayun. Why couldn't they speak up? Couldn't someone put their, you know, draw the line and say, hey, no way. To Interpol, that's a question we have as we move forward with this case.
Thanks for the report, Eric.
Michael, always a pleasure, and I will have a report on this Shahram Humayun Interpol story airing tomorrow on CBN. Check it out. Thank you.
I'll be right back. Michael Savage was the main story, but there was other news as well. We found out today that Obama's Supreme Court nominee, Elena Kagan, is in favor of what she calls redistribution of speech. You hear this? In other words, she wants to impose the Fairness Doctrine and kill the First Amendment. Here she is arguing before the Supreme Court in favor of banning political pamphlets.
We don't put our First Amendment rights in the hands of FEC bureaucrats. And if you say you're not going to apply it to a book, what about a pamphlet?
I think a pamphlet would be different. A pamphlet is pretty classic electioneering. So this is no attempt to say that 441B only applies to video and not to print.
And here's Kagan patting herself on the back for being nominated.
President Obama called me last night, and he said that I was going to be his nominee. And I didn't even know what to say. I was so overjoyed and overwhelmed, mostly. I'm not sure, actually, the joy has set in quite yet, but it's an extraordinary honor. I found two ways to make a difference. One is teaching, trying to instill my love of the law and my sense of why law matters in the world and how law can make a difference in the lives of ordinary people. And then public service has been an opportunity to take my legal skills and to take my legal training and work on some of the really important public policy issues of our time. And I did that both in the White House during the administration of President Clinton and in the Justice Department as Solicitor General in this administration.
Meanwhile, Nancy Pelosi got very emotional over her trip to Afghanistan.
A 100-hour trip, 40 hours in the air, 10 different time zones, and so when I said good afternoon, I said it with a question mark at the end. It was quite a remarkable trip. I was honored to be part of it. It was a trip, a visit to Afghanistan. At the end of the meeting, these four women gave me these bracelets. There are many more. They go all the way up to here. I save them for my granddaughters because it's very moving to have them make a sacrifice, even of a gift to me and to all of us in appreciation for our visit. So they placed their trust in us. We know that the future of Afghanistan depends on them.
And apparently Pelosi's very big on security concerns of Afghanistan, but not so big on the security concerns of the United States and Mexico.
Imagine these women from the poorest of the poor, beggars of last year, now employed because of initiatives of USAID. I'm grateful for that. But again, it all came back to our national security and their security. Security, security, security. And we believe that women, as community builders, as moms and the rest, are essential to that security. And we are taking that message back again to President Karzai.
What about the soldiers doing their job who've been imprisoned by the government, Ms. Pelosi? Well, the big topic of the day was the fact that the Michael Savage interview with Playboy magazine came out today on the Internet. Let's have some appropriate music.
And tan and young and lovely, the gal from Ipanema goes walking, and when she passes, each one she passes goes
to ah, that sets the mood. You know, Playboy tried to skewer Savage, but they succeeded mainly in skewering themselves by exposing their own hate. But there were actually some very good parts in it, and I'll keep reading them over the next couple of days. Let's have some more mood music. Maestro. The Playboy interview came out today online. So, to go back to the article, let's shift gears and play the name game with your media cohorts, Bill O'Reilly. Savage. I think O'Reilly is a phony. He has a background in entertainment. He's very smart. He has a good education. I give him that. He does a good job in his delivery, but he is very one-dimensional. It's either black or white with him, and there's no in-between. Also, O'Reilly failed at radio, which shows you how hard this is to do. Playboy, what about Rush Limbaugh? I don't know how Rush Limbaugh has an audience. I just don't know. I don't like anyone who was a water carrier for Bush all those years and now pretends he wasn't. I know he was deeply enmeshed in the Republican Party and George Bush. I mean, he has a right to do that, but don't pretend you're not a mouthpiece for them. Playboy, Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck is a laughingstock, the mark of the uneducated man. He has a blackboard. He plays professor half the time. What's with the chalk? He didn't go to college, so he's making up for it by playing professor on television? Playboy, what's your biggest complaint about Glenn Beck? That he's stupid. That's all. Other than that, nothing. What about Rachel Maddow? Oh, clutches hard. Aside from being physically unappealing, she thinks an ironic statement is intelligent. Her statements all have an ironic ending like, you know, as though she's still in a sorority house or a college beer bust, where every statement ends with irony. There's a reason she has the lowest ratings of all the people on cable. Etc. So you get the picture? With God's will and your listenership, I shall return.
It's absolutely one of the most outrageous stories I've heard in some time, and Iran is laughing all the way to the bank here. They're manipulating Interpol into striking out against Iranian dissidents overseas. So not only are they going to stifle dissent at home, they're going to stifle dissent overseas using an international body.
That's crazy. Sorry, crazy.
Now, we first heard about Interpol back in December. A lot of Americans, at least, probably couldn't even tell you what Interpol is until December, when President Obama issued a very controversial executive order granting Interpol greater powers here in the U.S. Basically, Interpol now is not subject to any of the same restrictions that domestic law enforcement agencies like the FBI, the DEA are on American soil. Interpol now, after President Obama issued this red notice, Interpol now is not subject to the Freedom of Information Act. Interpol is not subject, its offices, which are located, they share an office with the Department of Justice here in Washington, D.C., no search and seizure at their offices. So Interpol basically has free reign on U.S. soil. Now, I talked to the head of Interpol in Washington, D.C., and he said, look, the executive order that Obama signed in December, which really came out of the blue, that executive order will have no bearing on what Interpol does here in the U.S. We just are an intelligence-sharing operation, and that's really the point of Interpol, Michael, internationally. You're not going to have Interpol agents arresting you, running you down. Basically, what Interpol does is they share information with different Interpol branches around the world about, say, a drug smuggler, a terrorist, a kidnapper. So that is their role.
Mm-hmm.
But they say, look, it's not going to expand any activities here in the U.S. But you have to wonder. I mean, this is an administration, and there's no surprise that there was an outcry when he signed this executive order among many conservatives, because this is an administration, Michael, obviously, that is all about not only big government here, but this is a very internationalist administration with the, with Obama. This is a guy who is a UN guy. He's a guy who I think down the line will push for the International Criminal Court, Law of the Sea Treaty, all these international bodies which will weaken U.S. sovereignty. I think Obama is on board with 100%, and I think this giving Interpol greater powers on U.S. soil goes along with that. Now, they're going to the administration, since they signed this executive order back in December, have really downplayed it and said, hey, you know, Interpol, nothing's going to change. And the folks at Interpol told me the same thing. But you have to wonder, this was really a shot in the dark. Why sign this order out of nowhere giving Interpol these greater freedoms on American soil that even the FBI and our own domestic law enforcement agencies don't have? So let's bring it full circle, Michael. Shahram Humayun right now, you can go on Interpol's website. There's a big, fat, red notice right on their website with his mugshot, his picture, I should say, on their website saying he's wanted for terrorism in Iran. It's still there. And now Humayun is a guy now, he can't leave the country. He continues to broadcast his program every day into Iran, calling for democracy. He tells me that the FBI has reassured him, hey, you're fine, no one's going to bother you on American soil. But this set distances don't have to them. Iran now has gained confidence that if they approach international bodies like Interpol, that they're going to get action, that Interpol will act on their behalf.
This is unbelievable to me.
Now, talking to the Interpol folks in Lyon, France, where the organization is headquartered, they really didn't give me a straight answer. They said, look, we can't comment on specific cases. The one woman in their media department, one of their spokesmen, said, look, there's 188 different member countries with 188 different perspectives. But we have to lump, I think, obviously, Iran, Syria, Sudan, jihadist, genocidal terrorist regimes like that should obviously be held to a different standard than the United States, Europe, and Israel. But one last thing to keep in mind here, Michael, let's see how this all plays out with Humayun's case and with this Interpol situation in general, because apparently Iran is also targeting dissidents in Europe using Interpol warrants. But the final thing to keep in mind is that U.S. taxpayer dollars go towards Interpol. I'm sure a good chunk of Interpol is funded by we don't have hard numbers. The Interpol people in France tell me 81% of Interpol's funding comes from member countries. And the U.S. pays a good chunk of that, I'm sure, our taxpayer dollars. And also the U.S. is on the executive committee of Interpol. So I find it hard to believe that the administration, that no one in the U.S. government knew about this red notice against Sharon. Why couldn't they speak up? Couldn't someone put their, you know, draw the line and say, hey, no way. To Interpol, that's the questions we have as we move forward with this case.
Thanks for the report, Eric.
Michael, always up to you.
I'll be right back. Michael Savage was the main story, but there was other news as well. We found out today that Obama's Supreme Court nominee, Elena Kagan, is in favor of what she calls redistribution of speech. You hear this? In other words, she wants to impose the Fairness Doctrine and kill the First Amendment. Here she is arguing before the Supreme Court in favor of banning political pamphlets.
We don't put our First Amendment rights in the hands of FEC bureaucrats. And if you say you're not going to apply it to a book, what about a pamphlet?
I think a pamphlet would be different. A pamphlet is pretty classic electioneering. So there is no attempt to say that 441B only applies to video and not to print.
And here's Kagan patting herself on the back for being nominated.
President Obama called me last night, and he said that I was going to be his nominee. And I didn't even know what to say. I was so overjoyed and overwhelmed, mostly. I'm not sure, actually, the joy has set in quite yet. But it's an extraordinary honor. I found two ways to make a difference. One is teaching trying to instill my love of the law and my sense of why law matters in the world and how law can make a difference in the lives of ordinary people. And then public service has been an opportunity to take my legal skills and to take my legal training and work on some of the really important public policy issues of our time. And I did that both in the White House during the administration of President Clinton and in the Justice Department as Solicitor General in this administration.
Meanwhile, Nancy Pelosi got very emotional over her trip to Afghanistan.
A 100-hour trip, 40 hours in the air, 10 different time zones. And so when I said good afternoon, I said it with a question mark at the end. It was quite a remarkable trip. I was honored to be part of it. It was a trip, a visit to Afghanistan. At the end of the meeting, these poor women gave me these bracelets. There are many more. They go all the way up to here. I save them for my granddaughters because it's very moving to have them make a sacrifice, even of a gift to me and to all of us. In appreciation for our visit. So they placed their trust in us. We know that the future of Afghanistan depends on them.
And apparently Pelosi is very big on security concerns of Afghanistan, but not so big on the security concerns of the United States and Mexico.
Imagine these women from the poorest of the poor, beggars of last year, now employed because of initiatives of USAID. I'm grateful for that. But again, it all came back to our national security and their security. Security, security, security. And we believe that women, as community builders, as moms and the rest, are essential to that security. And we are taking that message back again to President Karzai.
What about the soldiers doing their job who've been imprisoned by the government, Ms. Pelosi? Well, the big topic of the day was the fact that the Michael Savage interview with Playboy magazine came out today on the Internet. Let's have some appropriate music.
Soft and thin and young and lovely, the girl from Ipanema goes walking, and when she passes, each one she passes goes.
Ah, that sets the mood. You know, Playboy tried to skewer Savage, but they succeeded mainly in skewering themselves by exposing their own hate. But there were actually some very good parts in it, and I'll keep reading them over the next couple of days. Let's have some more mood music. Maestro. The Playboy interview came out today online. So, to go back to the article, let's shift gears and play the name game with your media cohorts, Bill O'Reilly. Savage, I think O'Reilly is a phony. He has a background in entertainment. He's very smart. He has a good education. I give him that. He does a good job in his delivery, but he is very one-dimensional. It's either black or white with him, and there's no in-between. Also, O'Reilly failed at radio, which shows you how hard this is to do. Playboy, what about Rush Limbaugh? I don't know how Rush Limbaugh has an audience. I just don't know. I don't like anyone who was a water carrier for Bush all those years and now pretends he wasn't. I know he was deeply enmeshed in the Republican Party and George Bush. I mean, he has a right to do that, but don't pretend you're not a mouthpiece for them. Playboy, Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck is a laughingstock, the mark of the uneducated man. He has a blackboard. He plays professor half the time. What's with the chalk? He didn't go to college, so he's making up for it by playing professor on television? Playboy, what's your biggest complaint about Glenn Beck? That he's stupid. That's all. Other than that, nothing. What about Rachel Maddow? Oh, clutches hard. Aside from being physically unappealing, she thinks an ironic statement is intelligent. Her statements all have an ironic ending like, you know, as though she's still in a sorority house or a college beer bust, where every statement ends with irony. There's a reason she has the lowest ratings of all the people on cable. Etc. So you get the picture? With God's will and your listenership, I shall return.
studio in Los Angeles